Welcome to a special edition of 1010 Thrive, our 2024 five-part Easter special.
On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, some of us disciples went to Jesus and asked, "Where do you want us to make preparations for you to eat the Passover?" The master told me and John, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him." In the bustling streets of Jerusalem, amidst the throng of pilgrims and the chaos of preparation for the Passover, this sign, a man carrying water, a task usually reserved for women, was to be our guide. It was a detail so specific and out of the ordinary that it captured our full attention. We went, eyes open, searching, trusting in the Lord's words. We found the man just as Jesus had described. Following him to the house, we were met by the owner, to whom we relayed Jesus's request. The teacher asks, "Where is my guest room, where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?" We were shown the large upper room. It was already furnished and prepared. This was divine orchestration at play. Preparing the Passover in that upper room was an act filled with reverence and reflection. As we arranged the space, laid out the unleavened bread, the wine, the bitter herbs, and the other elements of the meal, my mind was awash with the significance of the Passover, the deliverance it commemorated, the freedom it celebrated. Yet, there was an undercurrent of somberness too, a sense of an ending approaching, of a sacrifice imminent that we could not yet fully grasp. The rest of the disciples joined us later in the evening. After we had taken our places at the table, Jesus did something unexpected, something that would forever alter my understanding of leadership and servitude. He rose from the meal, laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the feet of his disciples, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. This act, so humble and so intimate, was initially beyond my comprehension. When Jesus came to me, my heart was torn between reverence and resistance. "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" I asked, bewildered and perhaps a bit indignant. The very thought that my master, my Lord, would stoop to perform the work of a servant was more than I could bear. Jesus' response was gentle, yet firm.
"What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand."
My pride, my sense of propriety, rebelled against this inversion of roles. "You shall never wash my feet," I exclaimed, a statement born out of my inability to accept his servitude, as if to protect him from such a lowly task. Yet, in his infinite wisdom and patience, Jesus replied,
"If I do not wash you, you have no share with me."
Those words struck a chord deep within me, awakening a realization of the depth of his love and the nature of his kingdom. It was a kingdom where the greatest must become the least, where leaders serve. Overwhelmed by his love and my own stubbornness, I capitulated, asking then for not just my feet, but also my hands and my head to be washed. Jesus, with a gravity and intensity in his gaze that captured our undivided attention, took the bread. This was not unusual for the Passover meal, but his next actions and words were unlike any Passover we had known. He gave thanks, broke it, and said,
"This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me."
The bread, so familiar a part of our daily lives and our traditions, suddenly took on a new, profound significance. It was a moment of deep confusion and awe for us, as we struggled to understand the fullness of his words. Then, taking the cup, he passed it to us, saying,
"This cup that is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood."
The wine, symbolizing joy and celebration in our culture, was now imbued with a solemn, sacred meaning. It spoke of sacrifice, of a new way that God was making with his people, a covenant not written on tablets of stone, but inscribed on our hearts with the very blood of Jesus. Throughout the meal, Jesus spoke of servanthood, of the need for us to love one another as he loved us. Jesus also spoke troubling words that night, words of betrayal and denial. He revealed that one among us would betray him, a statement that sowed seeds of dismay and suspicion. How could one of us, who had walked so closely with him, betray him. And yet, even in this, his knowledge of our hearts and his love for us remained steadfast. None of us noticed when Judas Iscariot slipped out, never imagining what he had set out to do. Amidst the shadows and the soft glow of the lamps in the upper room, a heavy silence fell upon us as Jesus turned his gaze to me. His eyes, always so full of compassion and understanding, held a sadness that pierced my very soul. It was then that he spoke the words that would haunt me in the hours to come, words that seemed to echo against the walls of my heart with a weight I could scarcely bear.
"Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you, that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you, that your faith may not fail, and when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers."
His use of my given name, Simon, twice, underscored the gravity of his message, a personal forewarning that I was on the precipice of a profound spiritual trial. Yet, in my pride and my inability to grasp the fullness of the moment, I responded with a fervor born of loyalty, but blinded by overconfidence. "Lord, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death." My words, though sincere, were the utterances of a man who had yet to confront his own vulnerability, his own human frailty. Jesus' response was gentle, yet imbued with a sorrowful certainty.
"I tell you, Peter, the rooster will not crow this day until you deny 3 times that you know me."
The very idea was abhorrent to me, unthinkable. How could I, who had left everything to follow him, who had witnessed the miracles, the teachings, the countless ways he had shown us the Father's love, ever deny him? And yet, in his words was an unspoken understanding that the coming trial would be unlike any we had faced, that the fear and confusion of the events about to unfold would shake us to our core. His prediction was not delivered with condemnation, but with a profound sadness, a knowing of what was to come, and a concern for how it would shake my faith. Even in this moment of foretelling my failure, Jesus spoke of my return, of my restoration, and when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. It was a charge, a calling, even in the midst of my impending denial, an affirmation of his belief in my recovery and my role among the disciples. After the meal, 3 of us, me, James, and John, followed Jesus deep into the Garden of Gethsemane. There, under the cloak of night, Jesus retreated in prayer, burdened with the weight of impending sacrifice. His distress was palpable as he asked the Father if the cup could pass from him, yet not as he willed, but as the Father willed. Despite his requests for us to watch and pray, we were swallowed by our weakness, succumbing to sleep, leaving him in his hour of greatest need. The stillness of the garden was shattered by the arrival of soldiers and officials, led by Judas.
"Judas, is it with a kiss that you betray the Son of Man?"
"Lord, shall we smite with the sword?" "Come on, arrest him.
Enough of this."
It was there that I, in a misguided attempt to protect Jesus, drew my sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Jesus, even in this moment of betrayal, rebuked me, healed the servant, and submitted to his captors, emphasizing that his kingdom was not one of this world, where swords would decide its fate. The subsequent hours brought my deepest shame. At the high priest's house, where Jesus was taken for questioning, I followed at a distance, caught between my devotion to him and my fear of being associated with him. 3 times I was confronted, accused of being a follower of Jesus, and 3 times I denied him, each denial a further retreat into cowardice. The rooster's crow, echoing in the early morning, was a stark reminder of Jesus' prediction of my betrayal, plunging me into the depths of despair. In those moments of trial, of torture, and ultimately of crucifixion, I was nowhere to be found. When my faith was put to the test, I failed.
To be continued.